Okay, today is Sunday, the 28th of December, 2014, and I had Yahrzeit today for my mother, so I want to dedicate this year in her memory. My mother was an Isha Gadola who made a certain decision back in the early 40s that subsequently affected tens of thousands of lives, and that was when she plucked me out of public school and sent me to the only yeshiva parochial school, it was called, in the Bronx, Yeshiva Salanta, which today is known as Tsar Academy. It represents three merges. It's very different than the yeshiva I went to. But out of that decision, yours truly came, my brother, Dr. Levi Rothkopf, who has treated so many people at Mata Kodesh. I have another brother in America, so I don't want to, he's a good Jew, but I don't include him in the doing all the good things one can do in Israel. But I'll tell you one story that happened here in the Kollel. About 20, 25 years ago, a student had a problem with his eyes, and he contacts his doctor in Florida, and the doctor tells him, go see this expert in Petah Tikva. I don't recall whether my brother was with whether he was with Laniyahu yet, or he was still, what's the big center called in the
Tel Shomer,
thank you. I don't recall if he had left Tel Shomer yet, because Laniyahu made him an offer he couldn't turn down. So this student from the Kollel goes to my brother treats him, solves the problem, and my brother says, what are you doing in Israel? And he says, I'm learning in the Gris. I'm learning for Smicha. Why you? I'm in the Gris Kollel. So my brother says, do you have my brother as a Rebbe? And the kid says, no, there's no Rothkopf in Gris. And my brother says, well, do you know someone named Harav Rakefet? And the guy starts jumping up and down. Sure, I have him, my Rebbe. He says, oh, my brother lets him come on the vent. And my brother says, that's my brother. I'm Rothkopf. He changed his name to Rakefet. So I dedicate the shiur in memory of my mother. It's the third Yahrzeit. I also want to mention Chaim Meiselman, a student from last year, sent me a very fascinating picture of his grandparents with Milton Friedman and Milton Friedman's wife. That's the famous economist, and it seems his father was both a student and a professor and a teacher and a colleague with Milton Friedman. So I thank Chaim, and the Yichus is great, and Chaim will make it even greater. A small correction, I beat the hell out of Vic Rain or Vic Snow, whatever name you know him by, and he wound up in Cleveland. I made a mistake. The Brit was in New York. The person writing to me was from Cleveland, but he went to New York, and Vic went to New York, and with that, I'm up to date. Now, what are we talking about? We're talking about the Erev in London, and I showed you the very slick public relations. That's what Shmuley said to me. Shmuley's from London. Shmuley said to me it was a public relations book. Yes, it was a public relations book, because there was tremendous machleket, and they wanted to show that who put up the Erev. They wouldn't show a picture like Rakefet. You understand, what good is a picture like Rakefet going to do without a beard, without payas, without black clothes, with a kippah shrugah, all the sins, all the faults, all the sins in the world. But they show a picture who they brought over from Yerushalayim, the Eder Haredit people, and they reached the conclusion, as I showed you, if you're somech on the Erev in Yerushalayim, you can be somech on the Erev in London. And yes, Yitzchak.
The people that are opposed in London, is it because they are opposed to Erev like the Rav was, or is it because they're opposed to this particular Erev?
No, there's no such thing as being opposed to this particular Erev. But because they hold like the Litvish viewpoint, they really conclude that you're a Machalos Shabbos if you're Samech on an Erev. But it goes much deeper than that. I'll touch upon it in a few minutes, just reconstructing, but I'll come to it in a second. But it's not the particular Erev, it's the concept. You'll see in a minute. Now, what we spoke about last week was the North Circular Road. So I just want to tell you, in relation to the North Circular Road, a Talmud of mine from London. Let's see if I, with all my papers, if I can find it. Engel wrote to me here. One second, is this it? No, this is Nachum Lane. This is Moshe Erlbaum. One second. Here it is. This should be here. Yeah, no, that's David Newman. Give me one second. I have too many papers here. A Talmud of mine from London, Alan Engel, wrote to me that in relation to the North Circular Road, it's absolutely a major thoroughfare, but no more than 50,000 cars traverse it every day. So there too, you have living proof that when it comes to the North Circular Road, you do not have 600,000 people traveling on it every day. Now, in relation to the North Circular Road, I want to thank Yomo, who does magic with the computer, and he gets us a picture.
Is it possible that you use his real name?
Everyone knows him as Yomo.
No, right. You know him.
Now, I knew him.
Would like to know what he really is.
No, I know him as Yosef Mordechai. When I went to America, and all the Rosh Yeshiva told me, "How is Yomo? How is Yomo? Yomo loves you as a Rebbe." Didn't know who they were talking about. So if I say Rabbi Yosef Mordechai Gachman, no one will know what I'm talking about. Now Yomo came up. Here are pictures of the North Circular Road in London. Here's from a plane, an overhead picture. Here's on the ground. As you can see, it's six lanes. And if they could find a solution to Queens Boulevard, here is a picture of Queens Boulevard. If I'm looking at it correctly, you're dealing with at least 10 lanes. At least 10 lanes. And here, 12 lanes. So I'm not the 12 lanes. Here you can see clearly it's 12 lanes, 6 and 6. On either side, 3, 3, 3, 3. Now, Yomo points out that on the circular road in London, or rather on Queens Boulevard, if you notice, there's a fence in the middle. There's mamash on both of them. But what does that accomplish? Because the Erev doesn't end there. It's in the middle of the Erev. So it's there for safety reasons, obviously.
It's like two roadways.
But what you're trying to say is there'd be an Erev on one side and Erev on the other. But you have to be able to cross. So obviously there are openings. Anyway, I don't think that's... I don't know. I don't know whether that's figured in. Yosef, Moshe, yeah.
Is it putting a wall in between?
Exactly. On the side of the wall, on either side, you certainly have an Erev. No two ways about it. That's exactly the Chazon. And that's exactly what I want to mention before we get involved with new material. Now, what Yitzchak asked is a very important question. And that question absolutely haunts us. And it goes back to early childhood. And I'm convinced that a psychologist would agree with me 100%. My dear students, the most impressive moments of your life are the formative years when you're growing up. Unfortunately, I had to get involved in research on this. It's not in my field. My doctorate has nothing to do with psychology. But Loa Leinu, I've lived through suicides that I've seen up close. And as you know, just 2 weeks ago, we had another suicide in our neighborhood. And in the early 70s, when I got hit in the face with a number of suicides of Rabbanim, people I knew well, and the research shows you have traumatic happenings when you're growing up, and it hurts you, you suffer from it, even if it's subconscious, all your life. A recent suicide, I can tell you, with my own eyes, I saw this kid, when we came in Aliyah, was maybe 2, 3, 4 years old. And whenever his father would leave, and his father, you know, Israelis have to make a living, and some Israelis wind up going back and forth to America, to France. I don't have to tell you, in Beit Shemesh, there are plenty of people who go back and forth. Ranana, there are plenty of people. In Yerushalayim, there are plenty of French who go back. France already is a small trip, but America is, you know, it's a major trip. So whenever this kid's father left, he would leave in July. He took care of the import of etrogim. His family was in the business. And he took care of the import to America. And he would come back Hanukkah time when he collected all the bills. And I would see this child sitting in the hall and crying. And it was a deep, traumatic experience. And ultimately, everything in life went back to that frustration, to that anger, to that pain. And later in life, you reach a certain stage, and I don't want to go further, it'll wind up an hour and a half lecture, but you won't believe your ears that the greatest amount of suicide, everyone knows, though, is teenagers, right? The greatest amount. Second to that are males, late 40s, early 50s, when they realize they haven't succeeded, they're not going to achieve, and particularly in the spring, that the world renews itself, mitchadesh, and they are caught in the same rut. And it's very, very sad and tragic. And there's little you can do about it. It's something psychological, it's within the person. They try to treat it with depression medicine, but depression medicine is very dangerous because sometimes you take too little and sometimes you take too much. And it's not the panacea. It should be like other medicines that you take and you get the dosage and you're fine. Now, coming back to Erev, it goes back to your childhood. What were you taught? Abarashiyot l'Shabbat. You're taught a public thoroughfare, Rishut HaRabim, you're not allowed to carry. What's Rishut HaRabim, where people go, where people transfer? You take a look, New York, the Bronx, Brooklyn, where I grew up, perhaps London. People are on the streets, people are out there, thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. That's a public space. How can you carry a Nisa D'Oraita? On the other hand, if you take the Chazon Ish's viewpoint, you're not going to find the Rishut HaRabim anywhere in the built-up world today, because wherever you go, there are fences, there are homes. I was in Ashkelon for Shabbat. We had a part of my family got together, and we were in Yad Mordechai, you should know. And right in the middle of the museum, here we are touring, myself, my wife, our daughters, our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren, and right in the middle, the alarm goes off. There was a red alert right in the middle of the museum. And I felt very bad. I saw my granddaughter-in-law grabbing the two great-grandchildren who were with her, and she was shaking. And never, no one understands what we've lived through, and Baruch Hashem, alive and kicking, Be'ezrat Hashem, it should only be without trauma. But you, in Ashkelon, you walk along the street, Rehov HaTayasim. It's the closest street built up near the water, near the ocean, near the Mediterranean. I would imagine property there is expensive. And it's like Millionaire's Row. One house after another, and like South Africa, every house fenced in. Look, we're on every side of the street. Either you have major buildings, but there isn't a place that doesn't have 10 tefachim. 10 tefachim may be as little as 36 inches. All right, we'll be machmir. We'll say you need 50 inches. 10 tefachim, there isn't a place. Aye, then the streets open, so there's Omeid Yotel HaLaparutz, I mean, 100 to 1, not just 60 to 1. So, and if I saw that in Ashkelon, look at Jerusalem, look at Tel Aviv, look at London, look at New York, look at Melbourne. Melbourne is not undeveloped. I was there. I saw with my own eyes. So, you see, it's psychological. The Rav Moshe Bick took the viewpoint, if you carry on Shabbos and depend upon an Erev Yom Machalo Shabbos Peperhesi, I showed it to you in his handwriting. I mean, it's shocking. And if you take the other viewpoint, there's never a Rishut HaRabim. What are you shaking about? The last time there was a Rishut HaRabim was in the desert, where 600,000 male Jews gathered around Moshe Rabbeinu to hear a drasha. You follow me, Michael? And this is youth. Yitzchak, you with me? This is youth. It's the way you were raised. Believe me, When I started studying, I knew the laws of the river very superficially, you know, like every yeshiva boy. All right, I knew Shmir Shabbat Kehilchata, I knew the Mishnah Brura, but I really didn't go through the topic from A to Z like I've done, Baruch Hashem, these last 2 years. It required a new mindset in my mind that, hey, wait a minute, if the Chazon Ish is right, and it's not the Chazon Ish, he popularized it, but it was already said before him, and you don't have to be the Chazon Ish, just walk on the street and you'll see. Now, in London, this became part of the Machleket. And that's what I cited to you from this volume at the end of the last year, before Hanukkah, 2 weeks ago, where they're asking the Rabbanim, all right, the Chazon Ish, we can't deny the Chazon Ish said this. But maybe it's only a bidiavad, and if something is a bidiavad, why should I be samach on it? Why? I'm a frum guy, bal nefesh yachmia. And here you saw all the viewpoints they brought down of those that are closest to the Chazon Ish, Rav Kanievsky and B'nai Brak. Lachatchila, the Chazon Ish is not a bidiavad. He is a lachatchila. Okay, so that's basically where we left off. Now, let's go one step further. Rafi, then there's another problem. This problem is what I want to devote today's shiur to. And it's a fascinating problem. And it's a problem that affects us in Israel in areas we never dreamt about. And I'll give you the sources in a moment. But we come up with a problem called, again, I'm not certain how to pronounce it. If there's any great grammarian listening, growing up in my days, they pronounced it Karpav. I'll give you a source later, it's Karpif. I'll give you another source, it's Karpef. So I'm not sure how to pronounce it. But what it means is an open area, an area where people do not live. In other words, to build an Erev, you have to enclose an area for people to live there. Mukav ladira is the way we explain it in modern Hebrew. Mukav ladira, that's the halachic terminology, that's the halachic rubric. And mukav ladira means it's an area where we live. Then, if you enclose it, And any openings, you make a tzura tapetach, you put the wire in, the concept of something that looks like a door, everything we studied, and you make an Erev Chatzerot, and everyone joins together, and if it's in a city, you rent the area from the city authority, so there's no problem that Mechalalei Shabbos live there, people don't care about an Erev, or in Chutz Laaretz Gentiles live there. In Tel Aviv you probably have a problem already with Gentiles, Yerushalayim you have Arabs, so you have to rent it from the city authorities, then you have an Erev. But in every major city there are areas that are open. There are parks, their parking lots, their vegetation, areas that you can't walk on. You don't want to destroy the vegetation. Botanical gardens, endless. London, don't you have beautiful botanical gardens in London? Where I grew up in the Bronx, I think our botanical gardens was world famous. So this is the problem of Karpath. Now, like we mentioned, for instance, in New York, you take, for example, a tremendous example of this problem would be Central Park. Central Park is, of course, wide open, massive.
A lake.
Divides. A lake is in there, but that's only a small part of the park. By the way, a karpat has to be a minimum of 200 matayim sayim, something like 5,000 square feet. People have figured it out. So my Talmud Nachum Lam writes, just one comment about Central Park. Every inch of it was planned. That is, it wasn't a wild area, but I developed one. I believe, occupied mainly with slaughterhouses, but also some villages that were cleared to make way for the park in the mid-1800s. Every dream, stream, pond, and patch of grass, everything but probably the rocks that stick out of the ground, was placed there. So it isn't the wild area in the sense that some other places may be. I think the only wild area in Manhattan is Inwood Hill Park at the very northern end, and no Erev covers that. Also, just as you pointed out, you can stand on most points in Manhattan and realize you're on an island. The opposite is true of Central Park. Standing almost anywhere within it, you still realize you're in a city, as there are huge buildings on all sides, and cars drive through it on a number of dedicated roads to get from one side of the city to the other. They're sort of separated from the rest of the park, but you still see them. This may not be true of lower density areas like Golders Green. By the way, having been to Golders Green, I'm not certain it's a lower density area. If anything, I was amazed by Golders Green, how old it is, and the buildings. And in New York, you wouldn't pay more than twice $200,000 and you'd knock it down and build a new building. And Golders Green, they show me homes, $1 million. I couldn't believe my ears. And they say, of course, it's close to the subway system, which brings you right into the center of the city. It's ideally located, and lots of Jews live there. If you want to use a Chinese expression, a Haimisha atmosphere, then Golders Green and Hendon, which is divided by the circular road, you have a Haimisha atmosphere. Now, the real problem with Karpath is that we really have no detailed black and white explanation in the Gemara. What is a Karpath? How big is it? What is the reason behind it? This is the real problem. Let me give you some sources. Eruvin Daf Yud Zayin Amid Bet. And Eruvin, the Gemara is talking about when Osin Pasin Lebriot Arabad Madim Nirim Kishvana. But the Gemara is talking about that in those days, all of you know from Musa, it's a different world. When I grew up, I used to hear this from my Rebbeim, and I found it hard to believe. And some of my Rebbeim told me they remember from their youth. And it's the famous story of Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. You all know when it comes to washing hands, so lachatchila, you're supposed to wash up to the wrist. B'di'evid, you yod say if you just wash basically the fingers of the hand. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanta was the guest at this very wealthy individual, and he served him a beautiful meal. And Rabbi Yisrael gets up to wash. By the way, his real name was Lipkin, okay? Rabbi Yisrael Lipkin. But because he grew up in Salant and he's known in the yeshivish world, he used to call you by the name where you grew up, Rabbi Yisrael Salant. But why is it so important to know that his name is Lipkin? Because his great-great-great-great-great-grandson, son after son after son, Amnon Shachat Lipkin, Zichrono Levracha, was the chief of staff of the Israeli army, okay? And I don't know how much he knew about Yiddishkeit. Follow what happens in life? And on the other hand, don't forget that the Israeli army now has a brigadier general who will inherit his father's admorut. He will be a Hasidic Rebbe, Rabbi Israel Friedman's son from Gilo. The only Hasidic Rebbe in the world who has a kippah srugah under his shtreimel. So you see both sides of the coin here. So Rabbi Yisrael Salanta went to wash and he only washes his fingers. Ah, so the Balabas, Adam, who was entertaining him, says, Rebbe, why are you a cheapskate? I have plenty of water. And what was Rabbi Yisrael's unbelievable answer? Of the plates are from the shivcha, will ich nicht machmir sein. The shivcha, the maid had to carry the water from the well on her back. Because of the maid, he didn't want to use too much water. She shouldn't have to carry too soon again. And that's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, that's the Musa movement. And Michael, you see why the Musa movement never succeeded? How many people can live up to this? Compare this to a Fabrengin with vodka, with kichel, with singing, with dancing. You follow me, Alex? I know where I stand. I'm going to, in the Monday class, I'm hitting upon the Musa movement once again from a certain narrow angle. So Rabbi Yisrael didn't want to be machmir. What do you see? The Jews had wells, and that's where you got your water from. How do you carry on Shabbos? Not only that, what about your horses? What about your cattle, your sheep? Rivka, what was the test? She passed the test so beautifully. I'll give water to your gemalim, and how do you do that on Shabbat? So Chazal introduced the idea that you make their pictures. This is from Schottenstein. Pictures, you make double boards on either side, so you totally surround the well, and you can stretch it out and make it. You look into the Mishnah, you'll see you can make it bigger. You can. It's a homachloket how many amot it can be, but it's big enough that you can carry water out on Shabbat. It's big enough that you can bring the animals in. We do everything in our power to accommodate life. The people should not have a problem. Okay. Now, on Yud Chet Amud Aleph, in that sukkah, the Gemara says you're allowed to surround the area around the wells at Beit Satayim. That this is how big you can make it, but if you make it bigger, you cannot utilize it on Shabbat. Amrulo, so there was a whole machloket. Amrulo, lo amru beit satayim ela legina ula kapaf. And there's another opinion that as far as people who have to drink water, you don't have to measure, you can make it bigger, but it's only when it's an empty area where the area has nothing around it. Then you're limited to Beit Satayim. And if it's bigger, we do not allow you to carry there and Shabbos. And that's the Gemara. Here, it says here, Rabbi Yehuda permits to be included in the well enclosure. It's 100 by 50 amot, 5,000 square amot. So if anyone can, Yomo, figure it out, how big that would be if we want to understand it in terms of square feet, okay? Give us an idea, square yards, what the 5,000 amot, if we take an amot, can be 18 inches, some say it's 24 inches, see what you can figure out. Okay, now, why, what's the problem with a Beit Satayim? What's wrong? Why can't I surround it? What am I worried about? So people are not living there. People are not using the area. But why does it trouble me? Why does it bother me? Why does it knock out the Erev? And I showed you last week that in Efrat, for instance, they built upon every area that wasn't used by human beings on a face at the 724 basis, they built a fence around it to keep it out of the Erev. It shouldn't be Mavatl the Erev. So you'll see Rashi says something here that if you have an open area and humans are not in it and it's wide open and it's not built up, you can mistake it for a Reshut HaRabim or a Kamalis. In other words, what is a Reshut HaRabim? What is our concept of a Reshut HaRabim? Like in the Midbar, Moshe Rabbeinu. He lived in one little area, the whole area around him was wide open, and the Jews came to hear Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay? This is a Reshut HaRabim. This is our concept of a Reshut HaRabim. But we are concerned that people will see a Kamalis and people are carrying it and they won't comprehend that people are carrying because there's an Erev, they're going to view it as a separate area unto itself, and they'll say, you can carry in a Reshut HaRabim, you can carry in a Carmelis. And this was exactly the problem. How can you permit that area to be enclosed? There is lack of continuity. That's the way I comprehend Rashi. But I have to tell you, Rashi is not crystal clear. All the Achronim play with the concept, why? Why is the Carmelis ruled out? What's troubling the Gemara? What's the mistake that can be made? Now, another sugya that discusses it is Daf Chaf Gimel Amid Bet. Once again, in a Reuven, these are the two places. Chaf Gimel Amid Bet. And there it says, Karpap Shehu Yotemi Beis Hatayim Shehu Kaf Ledira Nizra Rubo Harehu Kagina V'Yasua Natarubo Harehu Kuchatsea Umutar. And I'll explain the Gemara to you. If you take a karpav, an open space, and Noah, you plant vegetables, okay? Tell me, can you walk on top of the vegetables? There's some signs up, they don't even let you walk on grass. All right? But most people are not makpid on grass. It's okay. People who spent money on their lawns and planted special grass, so they'll have signs up, don't walk on the grass, until it grows improperly. Maybe it takes a year, 2 years, etc. I've seen that. But Zrayim, cucumbers, green peppers, potatoes, onions, they don't want you walking. Because if you walk, you're going to harm the growth. So that's a real Beit Satayim. That's a real kapav. Humans not wanted. Not just dogs not wanted. Not just Jews not wanted. Remember those signs in 1925? I remember them. In Hancock Park. Remember what used to go? Remember upstate New York? What was it? Belmont? He came into the hotel and there was a sign. No Jews or dogs. He bought the hotel on the spot. Belmont racing track. It's no Begiches, German Jews, but at least he had pride in being a Jew. He bought it on the spot. No, here it's not just dogs. It's not just Jews. It's not just blacks. All these people who have suffered from discrimination. Here it is no humans wanted. On the other hand, you build an orchard. This whole area where we're sitting, when I came in Aliyah, I told you, no one believes me, but it's a fact. Chaval, we didn't take pictures. There was nothing from Rehov Uziel all the way to Givat Mordechai. Even Givat Mordechai was a little shtetl. It was nothing with nothing yet. But there were people living there. It was a Mizrahi settlement, Givat Mordechai. And this was all an orchard. I remember grapefruits, oranges. Are you allowed to walk in an orchard? Absolutely. No one harms the tree, the plants. You just walk around. You know, sometimes there's a pathway. Sometimes you have to make your own pathway. The word they called it in Israel is a bustan, right? It's a bustan, an orchard. You're allowed to walk. So that's the Gemara. That if it's planted for vegetables, you're not allowed to walk. If it's planted for an orchard, you are allowed to walk. So from that Gemara, you see that when you talk in terms of a kapaf, it all depends what the usage is, what the utilization is. Humans yes, humans no. That's the way it appears from the Gemara. Very fascinating. Now, it seems in London, and I'll show you the map in a few minutes, but I want to give you the source. It seems in London right next to Golders Green, there's a tremendous area that is not for building. It's utilized. Hempstead Heath, a tract of open wasteland covered with small shrubs. And adjacent to Golders Green is a tremendous shopping center. What's the name of the shopping center? Brent Cross Shopping Center. Adjacent, was that the first such so-called suburban shopping center built in London?
I think so.
Yeah, I believe so. I remember it was big news when it was dedicated, because in London, if you go shopping, you went downtown. All the big stores are in the hub of London, in the center of London. And here they learned from the Americans, the suburbs, so-called, tremendous land, cheap. You can't build a tremendous shopping center like this in downtown London. The land is too expensive. But in the suburbs, and a tremendous parking lot adjacent to Brent Cross. My dear students, here you have a classic example of a Carpath. And those who opposed the Arab in London made a tremendous outcry. How can you build an Arab? How can you include this area? Why was it so important to include that area? What does it connect with? Do Jews live beyond as well? Or Jews live on the side?
Brent Cross is about 3 minutes walk from that bridge.
Uh-huh.
Between him and the Golders
Green. Uh-huh. So I see if you must include it in the Arab. You can't just end it there, or it becomes an impossible situation, because when you build an Arab, you have a riot, because people, for instance, we were in Ashkelon, so I checked with the Mashkiach, who is a very interesting individual. He was from Bombay, India. But immediately I checked with the Mashkiach. I saw he's a Tachachim, there's someone to talk with. I asked him two questions. What, to see how far back of the hotel is the Eruv, and the truth is it wasn't at all. All you could walk was to the end of the property, and that was it. You couldn't go to the beach, you couldn't go to the Yam HaGadol on Shabbat carrying. You had to empty your pockets. That was one question I asked. And the second question was how they get their hot water. In other words, if it's from Devade Shemesh, if it's from Adud Shemesh, then if someone wants to be Mekir, Yesh Makom LaHakel, that's the famous Machloket in the Shmirat Shabbat Hilchot, the first edition to the second edition, to the footnotes, and the Torah Shebal Peh, that Rav Neuwirth said, that he really didn't change his mind, that it's Mutta, but he didn't want to, the Haredim were hitting on him, so he toned himself down in the second edition. So those were the two questions I asked. There was a big simcha in the hotel, a Sfaradic Shabbat Chatan, and there must have been 70 people there, including well-known Sfaradic Rabbanim and leaders. And the first thing they announced, unknown to them or unknown to me, what I asked, first thing they announced, Asur lechet liyam im mitaltalim, ha'erev nifsak acharei hamalon. Okay, so it was interesting that they too were interested in the Erev. But you see, when you build an Erev, it's not a chraya, because people grow up, people get used to it, and people are going to carry, and people are not going to ask questions, this street, that street. You have to make it big enough that, logically speaking, they'll understand Adkan. And now that you explain to me that it's so close, I understand. Now, in this Sefer, beginning on the Hebrew section, page 1, Tshuva b'din kapiyot sel zrayim b'klal. And here it goes into the whole question of these type of situations. It quotes the Gemara. It quotes the difference between Zrayim and between a Bustan. It uses the word in English, Dugma, allotments. Allotments, I had to look it up in a dictionary. British, a plot of land rented to a gardener. And they quote the Achronim, they quote the Masham, and the general trend is as follows. If it's for the good of the human being, it is not a kapaf. Orchards, botanical gardens. What's a botanical gardens? True, you can't walk on the plants, but you enjoy it. You go there. Shabbat in the Bronx, when we grew up, many from Jews went to visit the botanical gardens on Shabbos. It was free. It was a wonderful way to spend part of the long Shabbatot in May and June, July and August. It was unique. In London, I don't know if Jews live near the botanical gardens. It's not near this area, that I know. And what's it called? Kew Gardens?
That's very far away.
Yeah.
It's not close.
No, I understand. But it means if you have areas where there's flowers on display, bustan, it is absolutely for human usage. They describe the parking lot. And what is a parking lot? People can eat there. You see people in their cars. They're taking soda, sandwiches. As far as I recall, there was only one kosher eatery in Brent Cross. Am I correct? Still only one kosher eatery. In America, it depends on locations. You find certain areas where there's more than one. You understand? It depends on location. But in America, the ice cream depends which ice cream. In other words, there are objects that are universally kosher that there's never a problem. But sometimes you'll find specifically places under hashgacha, because you take Miami Beach, you take areas like that where there are tens of thousands of frum Jews visiting these areas weekly, including Satmar Chassidim. It's an amazing sight to see the women come out from Miami to the shopping centers in the suburbs and buses. And believe me, some of these women buy up dresses that your wife wouldn't look like, because you'd have heart failure if you saw her looking at the price tag. Got it? So, Baruch Hashem. But this is all for human good. And the attitude is 100%, this is not a kapav. And then you raise another issue, and this issue was raised in all the Achronim. What about areas? Fine. It's not that they planted seeds or gardens, but wild grass is growing. What the Chumash in Bereishit talks about, the land will give you dar. Who's the Baal Kori? Give me the Pasek. And what would you call that? Thistles. What would you call that in English? Give me a good word. Shrubbery, but it's wild shrubbery.
Wild flowers.
So what? People walk there. People enjoy. People see it. People conduct normal life. This area is not fenced off. It's not totally free of humans. And then here he has a whole discussion. What about areas where humans have left it? No one is living there now. No one is walking there now. This particular part of the park is not in use. So you see, they quote from the Achronim. So what? And if a person leaves his house for half a year, does that mean he gave up? That the house is Hefka? Does that mean he's not going to come back? When this is an area you don't walk in today, tomorrow they'll be building here. Tomorrow it becomes invaluable. Look at Jerusalem on Rehov Tayasim. There was an empty lot. No one realizes the story. Rav Berlin and Tayasim. I live in Rav Chaim Berlin. You know what I'm talking about? Right off Asa. So Rav Chaim Berlin runs the whole block. Is like a block and a half. And then Tayasim begins in the middle of the street. You know what the story was? After the Six-Day War, they wanted to name as many streets as possible after the heroes of the Six-Day War. So among the heroes, of course, were the Tayasim. That was the first time that the Israeli Air Force was used to such an extent that in the first day of the war, they totally knocked out all of the Egyptian airports, the Jordanian airports, the Syrian airports. The war was basically decided in the first few hours. So they called it Rehovot HaTayasim. So they wanted to start from the logical place is where the street begins. Let Rav Chaim Berlin be one block. And what does Rav Chaim Berlin mean to most people today? All right, Rakefet can give a shear for 6 months in Rav Chaim Berlin, but that's a different story. Most people, Rav Chaim Berlin, no big deal. I remember I used to get mail addressed to Bar Ilan, the post office. There were two brothers. One was Rehov Bar Ilan, is named after Rav Meir Berlin. Where Rav Chaim Berlin, the mail would get mixed up. No one paid attention. No one understood. So they wanted to start from that corner. That's where Tayasim should begin, Rav Chaim. Do you know that the people who lived those next four or five houses that had a Berlin address went to court? This is a true story. They didn't want Rehov Tayasim. Not that they're opposed to Tayasim, but Rav Chaim Berlin is meaningful to them. They're religious, they know who he was. He was the Netziv's son, he was the Rav of Moscow, he was the assistant rabbi of Jerusalem through Rav Shmuel Solan. Some people studied in Rav Chaim Berlin in New York. You know what the judge ruled? There was an empty lot on next to these homes, right in the middle of the street. And the judge ruled Berlin ends at the empty lot and Tayasim begins beyond the empty lot. Fine. And that's why Tayasim begins with a higher number. It doesn't begin with one or two, because they had planned it. It begins, I think, with 12. 12 is the first building. Then that empty lot, you know, that became the most valuable piece of property. This is the end of Rehavia, right next to Palmach, right next to Katamon. A doctor owned it. He waited and waited. He must have gotten $1 million plus for that, for the land. And then they built on it. There's a big building today where people from Minden live. I'll give you a name, Ruth and Moshe Cohn. If you know that family, they're the grandchildren of the Basel the Rav, where Rav Kook stayed. That he's a first cousin to the Cohn of the famous film producer. Okay, that's that they live in that building. There's a lot of in that building. I've met people who don't understand my English with the Bronx accent, okay? So, but you see, the Achronim are absolutely right. And I'm quoting here, he says, if you leave your house for half a year, does that mean you turned it into a kapaf? Does that mean you're not coming back? You can have land that's open, and it can be the most valuable land in the world afterwards. And they end off, Holel Anu Ladina, that we don't have to worry about a karpav. V'yimkein me'yatam minenon didan, in our question, where we talk about shtachim p'duriyim, p'shebetoch ha'ir mamish, v'yesh aleihim da'kei gisha b'kvishim salulim, b'zeh b'vaday ein la'arsa otam midin zra'im, v'shapir Havi ha'erev l'mahadrin. And this is what they pass in the halacha. And they quote, by the way, they quote Rav Halperin here, Rav Yochanan Halperin, that he agreed to this psak, and which is very important because some of his people opposed the erev, and he was considered the posek achron as far as the London community is concerned. But they paskin la halacha that if it's of a built-up area, I mean, what are you going to talk about? The parking lot in Brent Cross? What are we talking about? What are you talking about? The Wildwood Road, the holiday that you should see, it's a built-up area. There are roads on all sides. We do not have to worry. And finally, they go with all the problems. Hapark Shen Sal Yad Wildwood Road. This is not a park of Mukham's Ryan, and people can walk there. Whatever flowers they have are for the people to enjoy, and humans will walk there. And according to most poskim in the Chazon Ish, this is not considered a kapav. The king Hiskim Hagon Reb Chaim Kinevsky in the letter that we're publishing in this called Veret. That's number one. Number two, Hamigrash Chaniya Shalyad Brent Cross. I imagine it's the first time that Brent Cross was spelled in Yiddish. Beit Reish Ayin Nun Tet. Tell me, the cross, do they know what a cross is? How did they let them get away with this? Eina Kamakim Zrayim. Because anyone can come there. There's nothing that keeps people out. People are coming and going all the time. You can walk around there. You can put children to sleep in the car. And it's not considered a Makom Zrayim. V'zeh pashut. And then it talks about, number three, an area that's near the Holiday Inn Express.
It's a big hotel on the north side.
Okay, we have... Boy, it's good that we have an Englishman in the class. Shmuley says it's a big hotel on the north side. And he says that area where they claim their areas that are undeveloped and kotsim, thorns are grown by themselves. But there too, people walk, people go, people don't worry about thorns. In Yerushalayim, the Beitin of the Eidach HaRedet Paskin, that they can be included in the Erev, and they give more sources, no problem with including them in the Erev. Ha'andalit, kol ha'makob, makomot ha'nimsim betok shetach va'erev, shenisru'u bizroyim mamish al yedei b'nei adam dugmat alatmet. In other words, areas, how do you get this in London, Shmuley? How do you get an allotment? How do you qualify? You have to pay graft, or it works like what's going on in Israel, or...
I'm not sure what they're talking about, but there's an area near Brent Cross, which is like an agricultural area. It's not very big, it's
off the road. Okay, so he says, Hufku b'mechitzat omeid mamash b'fan mehuda biyoter v'einam osrim klal, that their areas that ataka allotments where they're growing vegetables, and they are surrounded by mechitzah, they're not part of the Erev, they don't passel the Erev, and he says this is lahalacha 100%. So you see, maskana de milta ha'erev ben nun vav, what's that, northwest London? Kefisha Sheba Nui Kayom Hu Erev Muhuda Biyoter. V'chol harotzeya chol lismoch alav lachatchila ledat maran hachazonish zetzal desviralei she'ein rishut harabim v'toch mechitzot ha'ir. And that is the Chazonish's viewpoint. And remember, this viewpoint of the Chazonish, if you remember what I quoted to you, very, very fascinating, weeks ago, that Mordechai Tendler in Masoret Moshe tells his grandfather Reb Moshe about the Chazon Ish. And remember, Reb Moshe says, he said, what he's really saying is we weren't raised on that Chazon Ish. We didn't know the Chazon Ish. Chdav Zen the Chazon Ish. And when they come into the Beis Medrash, Mordechai says he brought it to his grandfather, and his grandfather still was not convinced. You understand? And this goes back to you. This goes back to the way you're raised. Because once you take the Chazon Ish, you can solve every... I can't say every. 99% of every Erev problem in a big city. If you don't go with the Chazon Ish, then of course the problem remains a problem. The Shet HaRabim, how many people walking, how many cars going, the account of people in the cars. Take downtown New York, where you have hundreds of thousands of people on the streets, tourists, do you count Goyim, do you count only Jews, do you count babies in the baby carriages, cars were Shet B'fnei Atzman, and according to the way we build an Erev in every big city today, we're somach lachatchila, the Chazon Ish. And Reb Chaim Kanievsky says this is lachatchila, it's not b'diavad. And that's why in London, they were very smart to call in the people from the Eidah HaRedet. Because, again, I tell you time and again, people are influenced by the way a person looks. This is part of being a Jew. If I tell anyone I'm a Rosh Kollel, someone else, no, they laugh at me, they look at me, impossible. All right, if I open my mouth a little and start talking and learning with them, so then they're in a state of shock, because their concept of someone who knows how to learn has to be mit allein gebod, mit payas, mit abetish, mit agatol, without, you know, all the externals. So I apologize, I tell them I was raised in a different era, and all of you know I love every Jew in Halavai, all of you should have long beards and payas and bekishes and gartels. I'll know you won't sin if you have that all. But I'm from a different generation, you have to forgive me. You follow me? It's a little bit different, a little bit different. All I can tell you, Isaac, we viewed the Rav that he didn't. He had a Van Dyke, but he shaved every day. And I still remember Yitzchak Zimmer, Eric Zimmer, he's a professor at Barani, maybe retired today, big Talmud Chacham, a Yekka B'Makar, great guy. And I remember Eric before Pesach, our last year, you know, before the big break for Pesach, he says, Rebbe, can you shave on Chalamay? This is after class. And the Rav says, what do you do out of Yontif? Do you shave? He says, yes, of course, I shave every day. So that's what kind of question is this? Nishna Shaila Vatikenman, you know? And the Rav was reading, he didn't quote any Chatam Sofer, didn't quote any Nodeb Yehuda, didn't quote his cousin Rev Moshe. He let him have it between the eyes. You understand? Well, that's a different generation. Today, I can't conceive your last Rav Shechter, your last Rav Mordechai Willig. I see Rabbi Cohn here. I don't reckon, I remember him with clean shaven, no white beard. You understand, a youngster. So it's a different world. So I apologize. What can I do? I'm happy with the world I grew up in, but I'm smart enough to know that I cannot pass it on to Rafi and to Alex. You understand? I'm smart enough to understand that. Now, gentlemen, here we are. I don't know, did I do this or did you do it, Yosef Mordechai Yomam? Here, if you look at the picture, yeah, I'm holding it up. You see, this is the big area we've been talking about. Wide open. What is this, the parking lot here? Here, we'll have a, tell me what's what. The big area.
This is Hampstead Heath, this is the park.
Right.
The big park you were talking about, the open park. You can't see Brent Cross, it's over here somewhere. Uh-huh. So this is just gold screening. Uh-huh.
But this is the real problem, because look how big that area is, and it's right adjacent to Golders Green. Right adjacent. And that is exactly the problem we're talking about. Okay, now let me go one step further. And let me give you an interesting source, and let me allude to a very fascinating question. Like this, let me put this together. Moshe Tzarich, Yitzchak, you're going to see all this with your own eyes. Shmuley, you know people in London. So let find out where you just let them invite him for Shabbos. Show him around and let him take in the London atmosphere. Now,
stop. It's a funny feeling. I mean, Michael's wife always invites people from other cities, and we do. And now all of a sudden I'm in the same position.
No, Jews have to be machnis or reyach. Okay, now I want to raise an interesting problem which I'll discuss in length. God should spare me, but not this year and perhaps next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, or 2 years from now. You've heard of Marcus Jastrow? Okay, who was Marcus Jastrow?
Yes.
He was a rabbi in Philadelphia. Rabbi Zold was in Baltimore. Henrietta's father. And now, these Rabbanim, you know, in their personal life were frum, but they were caught up in a world where they felt it was impossible to continue Yiddishkeit the way we knew it. And if you made a few compromises, you would save the Jews from assimilation. Now, of course, history proved them totally wrong. But I want to be Melamed Schut. I knew many people who went to the seminary. At one time, Yeshiva College, the 30s, the 40s, into the 50s, and even the early 60s. Yeshiva College was a feeder school for JTS. Many of these conservative rabbis raised children who were my own Talmidim right here in this kollel and in other schools that I taught over the decades. Tzaddikim, mamash tzaddikim. I remember walking in Lake Success Shabbos, going to shul with my Talmud, Dr. Kaslam, and we see, he says, Rebbe, look up, that's the conservative rabbi. I see a rabbi looking like a conservative rabbi, and his kids next to him with their tzitzits sticking out, you know, beards, payas, the works. They're visiting from Israel. So you have to understand, I spoke, I knew, these people really felt that the future was with what we would call today the Conservadox movement. They never dreamt, I'll mention later today some earth-shaking news, but they never dreamt that this would happen. And I'm a Lamed Schut, not that I agree, you understand, 100% I disagree. But you have to understand, Professor Ginsberg was at the seminary, Professor Finkelstein was at the seminary. Above all, Professor Lieberman was at the seminary. Then you had the lower element, the junior faculty, Professor Zlatnik, Professor Dzimitrovsky. These people were tzaddikim, Ulam Dunham, Rufakim. But okay, this was a bad mistake. Now the question comes up, can you use Jastrow? So I'll show you, Rav Menashe Klein came out 100% against using Jastrow. My own humble personal opinion is you can absolutely use Jastrow. The man was a genius when it came to Aramaic, his knowledge of Shas. I mean, this is before computers, that you can find anything on a computer today, big deal. I remember saying in class when Shulamit Aloni, she'd rest in peace, I remember when she carried on, she got up in the Knesset, she quoted Chazal, she picked it up from the Talmudica. She opened up the Encyclopedia Talmudica, knew the topic was published. Today you can find anything. But Jastrow had this all at his fingertips. So I looked up the word Kapaf. He uses the word kapif, enclosure, especially an enclosed space outside of a settlement. They limited the area to two sons, only for a garden and for a storehouse. In other words, if you, you had an area that big, if it was smaller than two sons, it didn't affect the area. But if it was larger, it knocked the Arab out. And he uses the word kapif. He may be correct because this was his scholarship. I wonder if there are any relations, any descendants of his today that are still Jewish. And the second question is if any are still in the Torah world. Rabbi, his good colleague, Rabbi Benjamin Zold, was of course in Baltimore, and his daughter was Henrietta. And there I remind you again, it was a question of jilted love. And that's very important to know when a boy and girl, you start going out and the girl tells you drop dead and runs away. So I know, I'm not playing games now, I know young men who never married or married in their 40s afterwards, they could never get over being jilted. You gotta be big enough. If someone jilts you, the greatest thing that happened to me was getting slaughtered in my first rabbin. You understand? I went through hell. I'm not minimizing the aggravation, b'shat ma'aseh. This Michael knows the shul. But it was the greatest thing that happened to me because it got rid of my ego. It humbled me. Fabulous, fabulous.
Well, I thought that you could say that.
Baruch Hashem, what am I, a fool? And that taught me how to speak. Remember the stories I've told you. So you have to overcome it. And Henrietta Zold is a sad story. She was accepted into JTS as a student, very bright woman today. She could have gone to Bar Ilan, could have gone to Mechlala, but there was no alternative. But they made clear to her she can't be in the rabbinic school. that even if she takes classes, she's not an official rabbinic student. And she had a crush on Professor Louis Ginsberg, who was an Alta Bacha. Could you imagine what would have come out of a marriage like that, Ginsberg to Henrietta? Wow, but when she put the heat on him, he went to Europe and came back with a second cousin with blonde hair and lived happily ever after. And she never got over it. And that's why we have Hadassah Hospital. That's why we have Euphalia. Yeah, Steve, you understand me, I'm afraid. Okay. Anyway, being as it is, if you say kapif, you're probably right. But forgive me for saying kapaf, because it's gersa d'yanukta. I looked into Steinsaltz. There, I believe it's kapef. You can look it up. He has two dots. He also knows what he's doing. He had advisors who knew Aramaic properly, and Steinsaltz himself. Steinsaltz is a genius of geniuses. So it could be I'm wrong, but you have to forgive me. Now, Chayyadim. The Chayyadim is fascinating, and I'll just give you a word in his life. Someone just showed me an article. Again, I have too many papers in front of me. This is my, something this we did, this we didn't touch upon. This I'll talk about later. Someone showed me with my Talmud, Steve Gross. Oh, I think I have it to show you tomorrow. So he showed something that came up in the New York Times where they quoted Danzig, and that Danzig, he thinks, is a direct descendant of the Baal Chaya Adam, Rav Avram Danzig. Now, he was, the Rav used to talk about him, how did he make a living? He made a living from a grocery. He ran a grocery. And this little grocer was a gon shebuga on him. There were some people who argued with him in his Psiske Halacha, so to put him down, they used to say, what does the grocer know? But this grocer knew more than anyone. He was one of the briska held him in awe. So you look into Chayyadim, Hilchat Shabbat, Klal Nun Aleph, and he paskins la halacha. V'imhu yotemi beit satayim, zenikra kapaf, shalo hukaf ledira. V'ein metaklin bo, eladalid amot, kidin karmalit. The kivin shahu gadol kakach, v'ein asuri dira, michlaf, birishut harabim. And that's exactly Rashi. That if you see such a big area that's empty and houses aren't built on it, then it looks like a Rishut HaRabim. It's wide open. It takes us back to the Midbar. And if you're going to carry in it, people are going to think you can carry in a Rishut HaRabim. And that's the way he paskins l'chalacha. Look into the Shulchan Aruch, Shulchan Shabbat, Siman Shin Nun Chet, Sif Katan Tet, Kapaf Yotemi Satayim Shehukaf Ledira, Venata Ruba Bielonot, Afilu Einam Netun Shurat Shurat, Einam Mevatlim Hadira. Very interesting. You might think that in order not to have a din of a kapaf, you need easy access. In other words, trees are planted, you need a road that goes right through that you don't have to turn left or right. And here you see the Shulchan Aruch paskins, you don't need such a road. As long as it's trees and you can wiggle in and out, that's sufficient. Trees, humans can walk there. Humans don't have to worry about trampling the vegetation. That is not a kapath. It's still considered hukaf ledira. And you look into the Mishnah Brura, he says people use trees, they sit under them for shade. don't necessarily have to have a direct path. But trees are there to serve the human being. Avolim nizra rubo hazrayim mevatlim hadira afilu ein bahem elasatayim. But if you plant and people can't walk there, and people don't want to harm the zera, the minute you hit satayim, it knocks out the mukav ladira. And I'll give you another source which you can look at on this very topic, Siman Shin Nun Chet Sivkotten Yud. And look into the Mechaber, look into the Mishnah Brura, and you'll see the continuation of this very, very topic. Gentlemen, we have arrived the final part of the shiur, and Ashreinu Shezachinu, problems that we never, ever dreamt about. And these problems, Baruch Hashem, are real today, are tangible. If you saw the weekend newspapers, there was a fallout ceremony of the pilots, the new course has ended, and all the papers zeroed in on one woman in the course, the only woman who survived. It originally began, I think, with 70 plus women, and the woman is parading on the parade grounds in front of the Prime Minister, the Defense Minister, the general who heads up the Air Force, and she's wearing an army skirt down to her shoes. Draw your own conclusions. Shabbos at the Sheva Brachas, we were just a small part of the event. It was just one branch of my family. But the Sheva Brachas, as I said, must have had 70 plus people. And the man, by the way, the person whose son got married, the man who conducted it all, the davening, the speaking, wow, what a speaker. He just finished 30 years in the army, was a skanaluf. He went out as skanaluf. I introduced him to my son-in-law, who finished 20 years in the army and also went out as skanaluf. And in his speech to the Chatan V'Kala, in front of this whole crowd, he says, and v'zeh hachi chashuv shehakala teida she mekoma betoch habayit nashim lo tzrichot lazov et habayit. And I want to tell you, many wanted to applaud. I saw other people there were a little bit upset. And I told my children, I'm the worst example in the world, because all my daughters are accomplished in their fields, and my granddaughters-in-law support my grandsons, plain and simple. And I told them, I absolutely agree. I'm an old-fashioned man. My wife is even more than me. My wife would, if you marry, you don't leave the house. You raise children full-time. But you see, times have changed, and I asked everyone, how do you react to this? This woman parading with all the pilots, she's going to pilot a helicopter, and look at that skirt. None of you addressed that sneeristically. That's all I can say. I don't see my daughters walking with skirts down to their shoelaces. Rafi, you think about it, and show the newspaper to your wife. If you don't read newspapers, you'll live longer, but you all know what's going on. Gentlemen, we have arrived. One of the greatest Rabbanim alive today. Halavai, he would be chief rabbi of Jerusalem, but unfortunately he has more seichel. Evilt nish the kavod and evilt nish the akmas nefesh. A man who has appeared in this Beis Medrash a number of times, Harav Asher Weiss, who's a Rebbe to many people I know.
By the way, he gives a class on Sunday night
in English. Well, what time? 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
We're in Kahal Chassidim. It's Kahal Chassidim is right a half step before Beit Knesset HaGra and Shari Chesed. It's a brand new building. It was totally refurbished. And he gives a shiur Thursday night in Hebrew, in Ramot. And he gives an English Sunday night.
It's the Zohar Bazaar.
I understand, the Zohar Bazaar, okay.
It's amazing, word for word.
Word for word, okay. Baruch Hashem. And I have it in Hebrew, word for word. I'm now quoting from a shiur that he gave in Tashag. It's Shana Yud Aleph, Kovetz Yud Tet. And believe it or not, what is his problem? Exactly how can we build an Erev? The very problem we have been discussing for months. But that's not only his problem. Not the classic traditional problem. Not the problem of London. Not the problem of Manhattan. Not the problem of Flatbush. My dear students, we have army bases in the state of Israel, but most army bases are contained offices, areas where the chayalim sleep, dining halls, lecture halls, shooting ranges. But there's certain army bases by definition have to be massive. And that is the Air Force. The Air Force, what is involved in an Air Force? You need a major piece of land. You need, a young father, don't interfere. You need a major piece of land. I have a great-grandson who sleeps 4 hours a night. My wife checked it out. Kids who sleep very little are geniuses. And if you know his parents and where he's coming from, he has it. So I told my grandson, who barely walks in his he's walking in his sleep, and he's the eternal student, to bachelor's, to master's, has the whatnot, this, that. Wife supports him. It's very bright. So I say he's a genius, don't worry. So what you go through when you're a parent, but it's a lifetime, you should understand, a lifetime obligation, Baruch Hashem. Women shouldn't leave the house, Rakefet's opinion, but he may be wrong. He realizes it. An Air Force base. You need runways. You need an Air Force base the size of Ben Gurion Airport, the size of JFK. Not only that, this is the catch. I visited Denver, Colorado. A fellow married to a student of mine, an Israeli girl from Michala, they came back to Israel, they came in Aliyah, but they lived in America many years. He was the Rev of the Air Force Base. Introduced me to the command, introduced me. They have planes in the air. This is the West Coast. 24/7. In order to maintain planes in the air and you're on an emergency footing, God forbid, who knows what's going to happen. We know the world we're living in. Behead people in public and the world applauds. I mean, it's beyond comprehension. Who could ever dream in New York that the police would turn their back on the mayor when the mayor just spoke at the funeral of the officer who was buried on, what was it, Saturday, Friday? Saturday, probably. Sunday. What's today? Today's Sunday, so it had to be Saturday. It had to be yesterday. I mean, it's beyond comprehension where we're living. You have to have endless crews sleeping on the base, ready at a moment's notice to jump into the planes and take off if, God forbid, there's an alert which requires many planes in the air. So, and I did basic. Few nights during the basic training, we slept with our boots on, and believe me, that's not pleasant. But you had to be ready in a minute. You know, we're going to be great soldiers. We're 38 at the time, but don't want to run the state. We made our contribution. But basic training is basic training. You have to have, I couldn't believe it, on the Air Force Base, they showed me where the housing is, where people live, among them with some Jews. And they explained to me that in case of an emergency, There are mini buses waiting at a moment's notice, always geared, always ready, always gassed up, ready to run from the homes right to the planes. And there are always two jets patrolling 24/7. Now you take the Israeli Air Force bases, and they are massive, giant bases. And on the side, endless homes. For the new Air Force base that had to be built down south, which America paid for, and give them credit, after they forced us to give up Sinai. Do you know that a mikveh was built there, a $100,000 mikveh, paid for by an American who built it, L'shem Shemayim, because the women complained they had to go to Beersheba. A mikveh has to be within distance, even on Friday night, on Yontif. $100,000 mikveh was built on the base. Tell me, it's state of the art. No, you talk about a kapav, you talk about a kapif, you talk about a kapef, call it what you wish. Endless miles open, nothing on it. Runways, grass, thorns, wild plants growing. Can you build an eruv? And remember, the whole base is surrounded by a fence. To build an eruv and an army encampment is a permanent encampment. The problem the army is, when you remember my grandson calling me from Aza, where they're allowed to carry food over from Kibbutz Sa'ad into Aza. And during the war, you follow? I said, I can't paskin. You have to ask the Rav Tzvayi what the Nohag is. This is not the first time a Shaila like that has come up. But I don't want to paskin. But when you talk about a massive Air Force base, you have an Arab, you have a fence, you have a wall, you have everything. But you have thousands upon thousands upon thousands of square feet that is absolutely open. If there ever was the Kol Rashi, something looking like a Kamalit or like a Reshit HaRabim, this is it. Take a look at Red Square. Okay, except here you're not going to find anyone. Occasionally a plane will be running through. Okay, but you're not going to. Wow, this is a question. And Ashrenu Shezachinu, Rav Osher Weiss gets the question. Now, I'll go through the tshuva in detail next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. But I just want to summarize so Yitz will work out. Not feeling the Rebbe left him hanging in mid-air, as he always complains. Rabbi Shuwais goes through the whole question, the machmirim, the mekilim. But he says the trend is definitely lahakel bizman hazeh. And when you look at an Air Force base, it's true that it's massive, it's large, but it's all built. Mukav l'dirah, in the sense humans are utilizing the area. The only place that humans can't go is on the runways when a plane is taking off. Outside of that, the area is constantly in use, constantly in motion. And everyone has their assigned task. And you have to remember something else about an Air Force base. I once lectured at Tel Nof, in the many years I spent in the army. So I gave this lecture at Tel Nof, again, it's supposed to be a secret, but it's one of those secrets, I call you Dim Bishkuna. No one knows, but everyone knows Bishkuna. The state of everyone knows, Tel Nof is right near Chafetz Chaim. If you've been to Pailand, Chafetz Chaim, Yesodot, what's the one called? Yad Binyamin. You always hear the planes coming, going. So everyone knows Tel Nof. So I once lectured in Tel Nof. They loved the lecture. So after the lecture, they honored me and they gave me a tour of the base. So I learned two things. Number one, for every part in a F-15 and X-16, now already the more advanced plans, you have entire little buildings filled with thousands of books of literature, of any takala, any mishap that ever happened. Do you get that from America? You get it from anyone who flies the plane. And they have in the building, every part of the plane, a different area where they work on that part. So that when you, and then you see coming in to be repaired and then going out the finished product. So when you have a plane in the air, you have pilots, you have a navigator at times, you have 100 people on the ground that are responsible for that plane. Now what's more interesting is that most of these ground crews are religious boys, religious today girls as well, I would imagine, but religious boys. Why? At one time they were all graduates of Kiryat Noah, of the high school that the Torah of Adas people built in Israel. Rav Mendelovich's son-in-law built it in Israel for the Eidot HaMizrach. In addition to the ground crews on the elementary level, you have endless graduates of Machon Lev and elsewhere on the higher level, the level of sophistication, of engineering, of computers, etc. So that you, when you have a tremendous Air Force base, it's not just people who don't care about an Erev. These are people who need an Erev. It's part and parcel of their whole Torah orientation. And I'll never forget in Tel Nof what I saw with my own eyes. One more story out of the army, and I'll summarize that. I have a few things. By the way, we're davening Marav, so no one's to leave, and we have to have a minyan. One other story out of, I lectured in the big base in Sinai, which we gave up. And here at this lecture, again, tremendous crowd, kippot on kippot on kippot, and those that, not yet with kippot. And one of the higher ranking officers gets up and shoots the question at me after the lecture, how do I know that God exists? Interesting question, eh? So on the spot I answered, the very fact that you're asking this question is the greatest proof that God exists. I said, what bothers you? You're a high ranking officer. What do you lack? You have a good salary. You're happy with what you do. You have a purpose. Yesh lecha yeyud b'chayim. Ma achpat lecha? Ma gorem lecha bayat? And I quoted, it's the divine spirit within you. I quoted, v'yipach b'apav nefesh chayim. The Rishonim all are, God put part of himself into you. And that part is searching. It's not happy without finding the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why you asked this very question. Anyway, you should know that I heard months later he became a total Baal Tshuva. I don't say I did it all, but I helped on the way. Gentlemen, what did we do today? We welcomed guests from the wilds of Australia, Melbourne, by the way, beautiful community. We'll talk about it when I hit Lubavitch in a few weeks' time in the Monday class. I'm going to talk about the Groner family as my opening because I know the Rebbe from a different angle. I know him through the Groners. So I'll explain that in class and quote, etc. All right, we continued with Erev today. We continued with England. We dealt with the Karpaf I gave you. You can look up the Gemaras in Sanhedrin. You can look up the Shulchan Aruch, the Mishnah Brura, the Chayyadam. But the trend is absolutely lahakel. And as long as humans benefit, it is considered mukaf l'dira. I would not miss tomorrow's class for all the money that the Queen makes yearly. And those who criticize her, the answer is people go to London to see the Queen. So even though she makes hundreds of millions, she brings in billions, including Yitz and Sharon Rubin, who are going to London to see the Queen, adding to the British economy. I want to mention that the OU made me very happy this time. For Hanukkah, the gift of knowledge with these deeply discounted gift sets from OU Press. And I don't want to tell you who's up there, but among the company I am in, and I'm humbled to be in this company, They are making available three volumes of mine for under $60, $59.95. It is a good buy. It is Revel, Silver, and Washington. And anyone interested, go to the OU website. And I thank Steve Rose for sending this to me. And if they tell you it's after Hanukkah, tell them that the Rebbe said. He waives the fact that it's after Hanukkah. I'll get less royalties on Zayin Gesund to make it available to anyone who wishes to have it. I want to mention, I'll give this out, take a look what has happened to us. It's beyond comprehension. The conservative movement that I mentioned began with such good feeling and frumkeit and whatnot and to fight the reform. Rabbi Wesley Gardenschwartz backs off controversial plan for intermarriage. A prominent conservative rabbi wanted to permit conservative rabbis to perform mixed marriages. There was an outcry, so he double-talked his way out of it. But even worse, the United Synagogue Youth, that always was more observant than the rest of the conservative movement, than so many students I had who began their search for Yiddishkeit in the United Synagogue Youth. Do you know that the United Conservative Judaism's youth movement ends interdating ban? This is just last week. It is hard to believe. The Israeli press picked it up. God have mercy on us, how far the assimilation has gone, that the USY comes out that there's nothing wrong with interdating non-Jews. In our own ballpark, Richard Joel points finger over mushrooming yeshiva fiscal crisis. A very sad article, what our poor plant is going through, and with the Montefiore-Einstein merger falling out, it's very sad. If anyone here controls a few billion dollars, I will give you advice where to contribute it to. First to Gruss, and from Gruss we'll help them in America. Ancient rocks were found, proof of King David's existence, very, very interesting inscriptions. And it really proves we've been here. It's ours. Maybe the New York Times won't accept it, but it's black and white. Anyone who wants Yemei Hanukkah, this is about new editions. I tell you, I was born before my time. New editions of Chumash, of Mishnayot, of Mishnah Brura. I can't believe what's going on in the world. This is Korin, Hotzad Korin. What they're publishing, Ashrei Ayin Ra'atazot. This is from Rab Yisrael Tal, V'neman Beitcha U'mamlechtecha. It's about religious parties. I looked at it, I have to agree with most of it. I generally don't agree with them, but this time, very fascinating. Finally, for those of you who read modern Hebrew, this is Mochach from, it's from a week ago, from the magazine section of Makor Rishon. It's about three ranking religious officers and about their lives, how they began their army career. This is the Brigadier General who will one day be a Hasidic Rebbe. Michael, you'll say Bahu Rachum, Sidur Marova here, until we meet again. I wouldn't miss tomorrow's shir for anything. It is Rakefet's interactions with Reb Shmuel Belkin. Okay. Thank you. Oh, you get older, it's harder to get up.
You know, this Korin is now producing books that are wonderful.
Fabulous.
I tell you, look at the world we live in. tomorrow you're going to discuss Rav Lesser?
No, tomorrow I'll hit it, I'll sit, but first...
Yeah.